I'm Marcia Wallace, and I am an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is June 30th, 1981. I am an active member of the Living Life One Day at a Time group in Duluth, Georgia. I didn't know you were from Duluth.
No.
That's what I thought. Got to straighten that out. And my sponsor is Maggie H. from the Atlanta Biscayne Room. And it's a pleasure to be here with you this morning. Where is Donna? Where is she? She had to work. Oh, man, I miss her. I want to see Donna. It's great to be with everybody. And Lisa, thank you for asking me and the committee. And it's good to see Becky and Floyd. And I promised Floyd, because once I start spinning, there's no stopping me. And she told me that at one point, if she has to stop the tape, she's going to yell time out. So she's going to get me covered. So anyway, I am very, very grateful to be here this morning. And when I was asked to do this, it was only a couple of weeks ago, and of course my mind starts working, and Lisa had said the magic power of the 12 steps, and I started thinking about those words, magic and power. And then I talked to Donna Wednesday night, and she said the magic and the power of the 12 steps. So still those two words have stuck in my mind endlessly, and I have to thank Kim who brought me this morning. We left home real early. I have some prior commitments that are very precious to me, but that are in my life today because of this program and taking action on the steps that have been so freely given to me and passed down to me. But I did have some commitments that are very, very vital and important, and I wish I could be here all weekend with you. But we left real early this morning, and we left in the dark, and we came into the light in a beautiful way. We took 316, and if you've never ridden that road as the dawn begins to break, it is quite a spiritual experience. It's a very beautiful place to be. But I do thank Kim for bringing me, and I see so many familiar faces. It's always good to see people that I don't get to see all the time. But anyway, talking about the magic and the power of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And magic, kind of that word bothers me, and I'm going to choose to use the word transformation from here on out, because I do understand what we talk about when we say it seems like magic. And Kim pointed that out to me as we were talking this morning, and there's the key word, it seems like magic. In my mind, magic is the magic wand, and you touch a frog and it turns into a prince or a beautiful princess or whatever. And or you pull a rabbit out of a hat, you do all these things. It's just changing one thing to a completely different thing, and it's just sudden, a transformation, a change. But to me, it also can signify an illusion. And to me, magic seems like it's just sudden. And sometimes it feels that way, but it is a process. It has been a process for me. And as Kim and I were talking, we had a good meeting in the car on the way over here this morning. There was no mystery or no magic, and there is no mystery and no magic today to get drunk. I will not magically get drunk, just as I will not magically get sober. So I have to keep that in mind. There's a process for both that we have to go through. The power is the word. That is the word. The dictionary definition of power is a possession of control, authority, or influence over others, but the ability to act to produce an effect. And power is what this program offers, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, everything that's involved here. In my mind, there is no power. They have no power. There is no magic to these things that are on these pages in these books as they lay there. They are some of the most incredibly written words that I've ever seen, but a word has no power until it is spoken, until it is written and acted upon. But the 12 steps as they lay in the books are, that's just what they do. That's where they are. But the key to the absolute transformation, the amazing thing that happens to each and every one of us if we do it, is the taking action upon these steps as they are written. And this has been my experience, and I have to add that that's what I'm going to share. The first thing I want to do is just to briefly to read what the literature says to us, because that is, I find so much every time I pick up either one, the 12 and 12 or the big book. But here's what can happen. Here's the transformation. Here's what your life can look like and will look like, will become, if you take action on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the 12 and 12, it says our 12th step also says that as a result of practicing all the steps, and those are the words I'm going to emphasize, practicing, taking action, a few simple requirements that we do a few simple things. This is what the books tell us that we do. We have each found something called a spiritual awakening. It goes on to say that everybody's got a different definition of a spiritual awakening, and indeed, each one of you, the steps for each of you is going to be your own journey, and it's going to be different for all of you. You will not take the same road I will, the same journey. We have the same foundation from which to go, but it's going to be different, and everybody's going to experience it differently. So what I say today is my experience. But all of us, it says, each genuine experience has something in common with all the others. When a man or a woman has a spiritual awakening, and we've been told early on in the literature, this is what is going to be the only answer, is a spiritual experience. It uses the word experience in the big book. But it's going to have to, the answer to this problem of alcoholism is going to be a spiritual experience. When a man or woman has a spiritual awakening, the most important meaning of it is that he has now been able to becoming able to do, feel, and believe that which he could not do before on his unaided strength and resources alone. Self-reliance has failed us. He has been granted a gift which amounts to a new state of consciousness and being. Literally, we are reborn. He has been set on a path which tells him he is really going somewhere, that life is not a dead end, not something to be endured or mastered. We're going to talk a lot about domination or dependence upon other people. That theme runs through both books, and that's the source of most of our problems, is the poor, bad, confused relations with other people and with our God. In a very real sense, he has been transformed. And that's the word I like, transformed. Because he has laid hold of a source of strength which in one way or another he had hitherto denied himself. It's always been there. That power has always been there within each and every one of us. But we have somehow, some way through this disease, denied it to ourselves. He finds himself in a possession of a degree of honesty, tolerance, unselfishness, peace of mind, and love, of which he had thought himself quite incapable. And that degree word is important to me because it's written in the 12th step, and it just reminds me that 16 years later, I have a few degrees because I have been working the steps in my life, but I never get the whole thing, the whole entire 180% change. I'm working toward it, but I do have that degree today as a result. What he has received is a free gift. And this program, we hear people say that I did nothing to deserve this. I'm just here and by the grace of God, I'm sober and blah, blah, blah. Yes, that indeed is the essential ingredient, is God's love and his grace, which is a free gift. He keeps us away from a drink or a drug or whatever you're here for long enough so that we can clear up, which the first three steps enable us to do, to work the rest of the program. But what's added here is our part. And indeed, we do something to deserve this gift. What he has received is a free gift, and yet usually, at least in some small part, he has made himself ready to receive it. That's what I want to talk about today, is where the power comes from, is the action that we take. AA's manner of making ready to receive this gift lies in the practice of the 12 steps in our program. That's what it's all about. In the big book, as we know, it talks about one of my most favorite pages, and I won't read everything that that I could go through the book, and on every page of the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book and the 12 and 12, there are warnings and there are promises. But one of the most splendid places is on page 50. It gives the reverse of the promises. It talks about the trouble that we've had with people in every area of our lives, and that we did not have, couldn't get along with people. We couldn't keep jobs. We were generally miserable, and we wondered why. And yet, we go on a few pages over from that, and it says, here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, to take a certain attitude, and that's another word I want to talk about today, towards that power, and to do certain simple things. To do. Please keep that in mind. Nothing is going to ever happen, and no change going to ever come about, except we're going to get worse if we don't do certain things. There has been a revolutionary change in their way of living and thinking. Revolutionary. There's that magic and that transformation. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of the total failure of their human resources, they found a new power, peace, happiness, and sense of direction flowed into them. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. Once confused and baffled by the seeming futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making heavy going of life. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. And there again is the key. We come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and we put the drink down and we wonder, what is wrong? Why can't I live? And we go back. We either go back and take a drink, because that's what an alcoholic does. We have to have relief, or we find something that's going to replace what alcohol did for us. That's the magic, if you will, of the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous when put into action. They show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of their lives, they present a powerful reason why one should have faith. It goes on and on, but what I've just described is what we talk about, the being rocketed into a fourth dimension. And how do we get there, though? And again, when we talk about power, I think about it in terms of steps. I think about it in terms of a process that I have to go through, because the power, the lights that are on in this room, they did not magically come on. They are not always on. Somewhere in this room, behind these walls are circuit breakers, and they're wires, and they're all wired in a certain direction, in a certain way. And somebody who put them there knew exactly what they were doing. So that when somebody goes and flips the switch, which they have to do to get the lights on in here, we got to plug in or flip a switch, then those wires, it's an amazing thing that's going on behind these walls just to get this light that we take so for granted. Walk in that room, flip that switch, and there's the light. You say, oh, magic, it's light. No. There's a lot involved in getting that light on. If the wires have been wired poorly, or they're jumbled and confused, then this light's going to blink, this light's going to not come on, this one's going to stay on. It's going to be constant, just blink, 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 blink. Light, dark, light, dark, light, dark. Can't get it right, can't get it right. So something somewhere has to start that process. And that's where I see the steps. That's where I see sponsors. And to help us understand how to keep those wires straight, how to keep that, and especially to plug in. A lamp can be the most beautiful lamp you've ever seen in your life, but it's got to have a light bulb in it. But even then, it's not going to work until it's plugged into the power. And plugging into the power, this program has the power. And I believe it is a God-given program. Now, let's look at spirituality. Well, I just talked about spiritual awakening, and that spirituality and the spiritual experience is the necessary ingredient to get over this problem of alcoholism, or to live with it and to be happy, joyous, and free. And if we look at spirituality as it relates to ourselves, to God, and to other people, and there again is what this literature is about, what this program's about, then we've got to know that we're all spiritual beings to begin with. And we're either we're coming from a negative spirituality or a positive spirituality. Our actions, when choices flow with us through the positive spirituality, which is from a power outside of ourselves, which I choose to call God. All of you have your own source of it, but when it comes from God, for me, then my actions are going to be positive, they're going to be healthy, they're going to be constructive, and they're going to be life-giving. But when my choices flow from negative spirituality, meaning what, wherever I am in my being, and I am a spiritual being, then the resulting actions are going to be poisoned with fear, force, compulsion, habits, and all of this stuff. Fear is behind every negative attitude, every negative feeling that I have. And we're especially important for me to have to find out in this program was that I am given free will by God. I am given the right to make the choice from the very beginning. That is one self-imposed restriction he puts on himself, which he will never take away. We talk about giving our will up. I will never give my will up because he will not take my will. He will allow me to keep it. That's the mechanism that he's given me to make my choices by. But I've got to have a way to make positive choices, to make God choices. But he is not going to take my will away from me. But the way I operated with this, my self-will that got me to this program and keeps me in this program did not work for me. That was the self-reliance because I had taken God out of the picture. But I have to know, is it going to be self-will or is it going to be God's will? The initial decision, which is a decision to make up my mind to do one thing and not another. See, we've got to restrict ourselves right there. I've got to choose one thing over another. Is when I took that first drink, I could have decided not to take another. The first drink that I took was an accident. It was one of those things. I was like 9 years old, and a friend of mine's mother had a drink sitting there, and she said, "Would you like some?" And I took it. I loved the effect, and I pursued that effect forever. But I could have decided, based on the information I had in my life, the reality of my life at that time. I'm a Baptist preacher's daughter, and nobody drank at home, and drinking was not considered good for a nine-year-old, but also just not what you did. But I could have, based on that information, not taken another drink. Well, that felt good. It makes me feel free, and but this is not right. But you see, something in me at that point had been set up. I had already had the... alcoholism was in motion at that point and enabled me to make a choice which would control my life and that I would pursue into the gates of hell and would center my entire life around. And in order to do that, I would have to knock out anybody, anything, any God that would stand in the way of that pursuit, of that feeling. A favorite Bible verse of mine, and I quote it simply because it tells exactly what I did most of my life. It says, "What I do not understand, for I do not do what I want, but I do what I hate." Powerless. Didn't mean for my life to turn out the way it did. I didn't want it to turn out that way. That wasn't what I meant to happen. But once I took that first drink, my entire life changed forever, and it will always be that way if I take another drink. As I said, there is no mystery or no magic to taking another drink. It is very real, and it's sitting right there waiting for me unless I take certain steps. Separation from God, I think, is important because we're going to talk about this throughout this whole thing. All of my life is with much of you, my perceptions of everything, and that's where it all starts, is my perception of the world around me and the people around me and my place in it and all of my fears and all of these things. First of all, was that God must be very good, but somehow I'm not connecting. He doesn't want me. He's going to get me. But all of these things that we always go through. So that separation began early on out of fear of God, because I didn't understand that maybe when we hear the phrase fear of God, maybe they're just talking about respect of God. I think that's important. Respect. God deserves respect. But I latched on to anything negative that I could, so the separation started there. Alcoholism, as it progresses, eventually at some point separates us completely, because in order to pursue the drink and the actions that do follow and accept the consequences of our behavior, we have to deny the part of us that is telling us that it is wrong or that we can do something different. But there's a paradox that I think is interesting. The power to develop a positive spirituality, and that's all we're talking about, is wanting the power to develop positive life, a happy, joyous, and free life, and to make positive choices, which means sanity. And my definition of insanity is the inability to grasp the reality of my life as it is. And sometimes today I cannot grasp the reality of my life. I have to take a step back and look at it, where it's come to. But this ability to make these positive choices cannot be restored until I admit that I have no other choice left. The program is full of paradoxes, things that just don't seem. Out of utter defeat comes victory, all of these things. But this brings me to step one. And in step one, I had to understand how much power alcohol had over me before I could really understand how powerless I really am. I don't ever lose the choice to take a drink, but at the time I didn't understand about powerlessness, what it meant, until I'd been in this program a while. But step one simply asks that I look at the facts of my life honestly and draw my own conclusions. Only you can say whether you're an alcoholic. And the literature helped me understand that, but experiencing life sober really helped me understand that. Because that's when you find out if you're really an alcoholic. For me, that was it. Because all I know about step one is that I couldn't drink successfully, and I could not stay sober successfully. And there's the hell right there. Because to have the choice to drink, and when it quit working for me, and not having anything to replace it, well, that's death. And if you don't believe today, each and every one of you, to take another drink is to die, which death for me is mental, physical, spiritual, emotional, it's all of these things, then you haven't had your last drink probably. And please know that, because death comes in stages, and it can be a very long, the hell of death can be, we can do it while we're living. And this is not what I want to do today, and that's why I stay in this program and stay active. But to see that I hadn't really been in control of my life at all, that life had controlled me all of my life. I drank for 25 years, and it had never really been my own. And that's all I thought it was, that I made my own way. I chose my own life. I separated myself from God, religion, the family, everything that they said would work and worked for everybody else but didn't for me. I took my life over and decided to run it myself, I thought. And I thought I had power to do it. My thinking, my perceptions, the way I saw things, and my ability to reason, my intellect. God gives us all brains to, and I used that excuse when I was 16 years old. God gave me a brain to use, so I'm going to use it to run my life. The ability to be reasonable and rational, in other words, to know if I do this, this is going to happen. This is all eroded when I take a drink. And all of us, I think for everybody, anybody who takes a drink, oh boy, the feeling that comes over you, it's not just alcoholics, it's people who drink. There's a certain physical something that happens there, but the mind begins to, everything changes and we see things differently. But of course for the alcoholic, you know, we don't remember where we left our car. We don't know who it is laying down there next to us and in what state we're in. This physically, literally, which state, Alabama, Florida, wherever, where am I? Non-alcoholics, this doesn't usually happen to, but it does happen to us. So our ability to think and be rational is really eroded and eventually impaired so badly. That is the insanity that we're talking about. We're not talking about stupid little things we do every day. We're talking about that literally happening. But from that, we begin to operate on feelings. I did. Always had strong feelings. And they developed real early, but I began to operate out of those feelings, and out of feelings, attitudes come up. From my perception of the way things are going on, and I've got strong feelings, you know, like for instance, if I had a hurt feeling, somebody hurt my feelings, and I could really, real sensitive about things, I'd feel persecuted, like, they're picking on me when I was a kid. They're picking on me. They don't love me. They don't understand me. They're not listening to me. Da, 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 on and on and on. Then I get defensive. Well, so-and-so, you know, we have to go to that route. And then revenge and retaliation. I'm going to get them back, or I'll show them. those little things started early on in me, real early. But the alcohol, once I got full-blown into alcoholism, and this is from 9 years on, by the time I'm a teenager, I have a defense system set in place that you could not penetrate. And I could go right through all of those things and that rationalization and those justifications and explain why. I could never just say I was wrong or yeah, right, and go on. All these little things that set in place. But then those feelings and those negative attitudes begin to dominate and rule my life. And feelings give power, there's that word, to the thought. So it's that first thought and then the feelings, and they give the thoughts power. And then the attitudes come forth of it's you, all these things, endless. You're going to hear them all weekend long, victimization, blame, this, we develop negative attitudes and we take actions on those attitudes. And my behavior, though, is eventually what's going to get me in jail or not in jail. It's going to get me in trouble with you. It's my behavior, what I do. One more time, action, how I act. The measure of my sobriety, I was talking to somebody in the restroom a while ago. I talk to everybody everywhere. It's just endless. Anywhere you want to go, strangers on the street, if they want to talk, we'll talk. If you want to know how my program's working today, ask my husband, ask my daughter, ask my coworkers, ask the people that I sponsor. That's the truth of how my program and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is working for me. How I'm behaving. That's all they know. And that's all I know is how you behave. And that's going to be how I'm going to determine it. But anyway, one of my big things was perfectionism, because I could not admit, I didn't even know, but I couldn't admit my limitations and accept them, because it all tied back into that feeling of being worthless and never measuring up, nobody hearing me. You know, we all start off like this. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's just the way it happens. There are circumstances, there are family situations, there are things that cause this. But we as alcoholics, they take on a life all their own. But it's not my limitations which cause my problems. It's my attempt to control myself and other people and God as if I have no limitations. And you see, so step one is really a reality check. That's all. It asks me to admit honestly, which is tough for some of us, how things really are in my life, which is where the insanity comes in. Not how I want them to be. We don't get there yet with that one, which is the sanity which will eventually come, but how they really are. And that's the start of the steps for me. And insanity is covered very well when we talk about unmanageability. Step two flowed naturally from step one for me. It took me 2 years to get to these steps, to work them, to begin to work them, because I spent 2 years in this program denying. I didn't even know the order of the steps. I'd have to look on the wall and read them. I never picked up a book. I never went to a step study, and I certainly didn't take a positive suggestion from a sponsor, and wasn't anybody going to tell me what to do. That bitch, what does she know? She's just a drunk, you know? Well, try it. Just keep trying it. Keep going with it. And just let me know how happy you are and how well your life turns out. Do it the way I did it the first 2 years, and let's see where you end up. But I know where I ended up. But anyway, I had to, step one had forced me to admit my behavior, the actions that I chose, and I chose them, wasn't working, because consequences were proving that. Step two was asking me to begin to let go of this rigid behavior, that I was going to have to let go of it somehow, some way, to give it up. And I was going to have to give it up to somewhere else, because I couldn't do it on my own and just give it up on self-reliance. I was going to have to know, which is to trust and believe, that I can learn to be content with who I am, and not only that, I can become something that is incredibly different today than I was 16 years ago. This attitude, and this is the beginning of a different and a positive attitude, makes for sanity. We begin to stop arguing, as it says in the 12 and 12, but my case is different, but you don't understand, but blah, 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 blah. You talk yourself right into the grave with that but. There are no buts in reality. Anytime you follow a sentence with but. Don't you love it when I gossip about people? I'll say, Lisa is such a wonderful person. She is just great. I love her so much. but. Do any of y'all do that? You follow with, but I wish she would just so-and-so would cook more of those hot dogs. She cooks so good for next time or whatever. We come up with something. That second, that but completely negates the first sentence. So forget. Don't even say it. Don't even say it because you just said something and you just lied. But anyway, we stop arguing, and right there, when we stop arguing, here's some magic coming in here. The minute I stopped arguing, and this is my experience, I didn't know it at the time. I never knew when I was working these steps. The first time and the 16 years since then, and trust me, I've had a lady step study going for the last 12 of these 16 years, and I've missed maybe 10. I can't get enough of it. I am becoming, I am evolving, and I am nowhere near, I'm just like still in kindergarten, but I love it. But the minute I stopped arguing, when I looked back and turned and really said, okay, I gotta give up. What? Tell me. I'll do it. Then I began to see and feel differently than I had in so long. 2 years into this program, gonna had a gun to my head. Something started happening. I didn't know it at the time, what was going on. But all I know is something was beginning to change. But right there is the beginning of the end of the isolation. See, I'd isolated myself. My isolation was complete from everybody, every friend, my family, everything that had ever been dear to me, and the God that had brought me into this life and had tried so hard with me. But it's the beginning of the end. And that's where we have to know a high power greater than ourselves is going to restore me to sanity. Well, for me, it was the group, and especially it was a sponsor. That's when I gave my life over to a sponsor. And for me, she to this day is a higher power for me because she is a channel. She's one of the best wires that goes to flipping that switch on. And I have to remember that forever. I never outgrow her because she is God-given. She was put in my path just as everybody, all of you, everybody I sponsor and my sponsor and each of you was put here for a reason. And I got to be here and pay attention because God's given you some information that I need for my life, and I better listen and not turn away from you. You may have some information I need so as how not to run my life. That's important, too. I learned a long time ago not to hang out with people who were as sick as me or sicker than me because I'm going to stay sick. I can go to a bar and do that any day, and they're going to listen to all my problems, but they're not going to help me solve them. I'm going to come back on the street and have the same problems. But in step three, once I've made that decision, what we're talking about in step three, it involves three things. It involves making a decision. It involves my will in my life. What is my will in my life? And what's God's will and what's his care? What does it mean? But to decide means to come to cut off. That's what the dictionary says, cut off, come to a definitive end. And I had to make a decision to let God, just to let him. And God, as I said, I got the word confused. I didn't want, and I spent years tying it in with all that old thoughts about what God was. I let that go. My God, my higher power was Maggie Harrison and you people, and the people of Alcoholics Anonymous and the actions that I was given to take. That was such a relief that I didn't have to go any further than that. But once I admitted I was powerless and I acknowledged that there was a power greater than me, I had to step back from running the show. And I did. I said, I give up. My life, it hadn't worked. Hadn't worked sober, drunk, and it sure hadn't worked sober. And I had to give you the direction. I had to turn to you for the direction of my life. The drama that had been my life. And oh, was it ever dramatic. All of us, boy, we all ought to be in the movies, you know. Academy Award performances. And I spoke recently in Washington, D.C. in an amphitheater. And it was wonderful. It was outside, and they had the lights up here and the Klieg lights down here. And I was so overtaken with the need. I thought, I've always wanted to do Scarlett O'Hara or Blanche DuBois. You know, it's so dramatic. We are all so dramatic with all this terrible stuff that goes up. And it's amazing how the sun comes up every morning, and it goes down at night, and it comes back up again. Have you ever noticed that? When it's raining, the sun's going to shine. Whatever problem you got today is a crisis you're going to die over. Check it out tomorrow and see if it's that bad. But anyway, I had to learn to follow directions, and I couldn't follow directions because I never liked asking for help. That's the beginning of what my sponsor today has got real easy for me. When I am in trouble, it's my ego out of bounds, it's my pride. But the reason I couldn't ask for grace is my pride. I know how to do this on my own. But obviously, I did not know how to do it on my own. But anyway, we come to a place, God's care, what that means, His care is unlimited. And if you don't believe it, look around you, read the books. I don't have enough time to go into what God's care can really mean, what a life looks like when it's been placed in the care of God. But the realization that we're the only ones who place limits on the care of God brings us to step 4 and 5. It brought me to step 4 and 5. And I had begun to become aware of God's presence, His literal presence. And I remember when that happened, and it was a time when I remember being on my knees to pray one night, and I literally felt a presence in the room with me, which is just, it's those things, that transformation, that magic, whatever you want to call it, that just hits us in, by the time we get to a certain place, we are astounded at what has been happening. But I have been following directions and doing what somebody else said to do. These books, which are given from God, and the people who have experienced the problem and have resolved it. We are asking the third step prayer. We ask God to relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness, which means to show through my behavior. To those I would help, of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life, may I do Thy will always. The answer from God to the third step prayer. If you wonder if your prayers are answered, they are. The answer to the third step prayer is the steps 4 and 5. We've just asked Him, I ask Him to relieve me of the bondage of self. So He gives me step 4 and 5, which I have to act upon. The minute I make the request, God, show me a way from the bondage of self to break the chains that I have placed myself in. He says, okay, I'm going to give you 4. Which made me search and identify the ways that I had blocked God's care. I had asked myself, what barriers had I constructed? What had held me back from receiving the fulfillment of God's endless grace and mercy and care in the past and now, today? Step 4 is more, it was more for me than just a sweeping examination of my conscience. Yeah, boy, I was bad, 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 and they were, you know, all this stuff. It says, searching and fearless, which asks me not to just admit I was selfish, but it tells me I better get specific, and I've got to point out places and people. And the reason for this is simply so that I can get, by getting specific, I can, with the help of a sponsor, look at patterns, which develop from that first thought, from that thinking, and the behavior that would result, which is my will in my life. Is my thinking and my actions. So that's a fourth step, is not to be feared. It is an answer to a prayer. It is just to be gone through. It's just an honest, open, objective look at with a sponsor. It's not a pretty picture, and it's going to hurt, and it is a mess. Of course it's a mess. You don't sit down and do a fourth step and have all these glowing reports. If you do, why are you here? Why are we here? The big book says nothing about it. The 12 and 12 is a little bit easier on it. It says we kind of looked at some assets because keep you from killing yourself over what you've done in the past. But the fourth step, we're gonna look at this stuff, and it ain't a pretty picture. But there's where the proof is gonna lie. The search conducted in step 4 is always done under the care of God. So keep that in mind when you're on this fourth step misery. God, you've just given it to God, to His care, yourself. So He's going to take care of you through it. You're not going to die from a fourth step. And you ain't going to get drunk from a fourth step, and don't let anybody convince you of that. If you get drunk after you've done a fourth step, it wasn't because you did a fourth step, it's because you didn't do step 1. That's all. That's that simple. So, but I've heard that excuse used. But anyway, all it is, it's not a means to beat up ourselves. We've done that enough. I hurt me more than I could have ever hurt another human being. I hurt God through killing myself and every gift He ever gave me, which I tried to destroy. But it's not that, not trying to do that. It's just a way to detect the clogs in the drain, the gimps in the wires that are keeping the power away. Let's go in here. Let's just open that wall up. Let's see. Let's try. We may have to open up a lot of places. Let's just see where it is. That's all. So that we can find out what's blocking us. From realizing what we really are, the good, the real that's in us. Some T-shirt, I love me just the way I am. I love me as a person and a child of God, but not completely the way I am. I love my way, myself a lot better than I ever have before, and it gets better, but I'm loving myself as a child and an instrument of God, but I sure don't love the old me, and I had a way to change the old me, and that's what happens. But this this is where we really begin to move into the magic, and the power becomes so evident to some right away, but not the fifth step. It says you're going to feel this immediate relief, and everybody, I didn't feel very good. Well, no, of course you don't feel good after you've just told everything that you've ever done, and it is not a pretty picture, and it involves somebody's husband or somebody's dog or something terrible, you know. This is not a great relief, we don't think, but it's eventually there is so much power in speaking what horrid, unbelievable thoughts we have had, the unspeakable, when it becomes spoken, it has to, half of the power it has to hurt you is gone already by just saying it. And by having someone sit there and not get up and run out the door once you've told them that is the other part of it. God, what a relief. And boy, do we come to know that later on, that you can tell it to somebody who understands. They don't maybe, it doesn't matter, they know what you're talking about, what you did. They don't have to have done that, but they understand the feelings and where we are, and we're in this thing together. So once we've spoken that word, that's in that fifth step. But by then, we're beginning to take responsibility. There's no personality change. There was no change in me except that I was willing to do certain things. But by then, I'm beginning to take responsibility through the fifth step and through talking to somebody else and to see the patterns and to admit. And the 12 and 12 has the definition of humility, which I use all the time to remind myself. Humility is purely and simply who and what I am, which is the good and the bad in me. And if you say something good about yourself today that you do well, that's not ego and that's not grandiosity. It's just thanking God for a gift that He's given you. It is humility to recognize what is good and what you're talented and able and capable of doing, and accepting the bad in us, which is those parts of us, those dark places, the character defects that we all have, we'll always have, and acknowledging that we are limited as human beings. But that's what. But the main thing about humility is not just who and what I am, but a sincere attempt, and the book says it, attempt to work toward becoming what I can be. It mentions it in the fifth step in the 12 and 12, again in the 11th step. That's what humility is. And keep that in mind, because humility underlies all these steps for me, and I've got to know honesty and humility. But I had to come to know by beginning to look at this that I wasn't necessarily the cause of some of my problems. I did not cause some of the things that happened in my life and the pain and the problems. I wasn't responsible at the time that it happened, but it was my responsibility to do something about them or how I was feeling about them. And I had to give up blaming other people and situations and beginning to understand that, you know, resentments rot my soul. They rot my very soul, and they tie my problems to me. But this is where I begin to be able to start to do this, just by talking about it and beginning to see patterns. But in step five, as I said, we're beginning to, this amazing healing that comes about. Forgiveness begins to creep. It began to creep. I could forgive myself because you could sit there and listen to me, which meant you could accept me as a human being, and I wasn't so bad after all. And I could begin to think about what I would need to do in the future steps. But the beginning of some balance began to come in my life. And six and seven for me simply, first I do want to say about five, we hear the word integrity all the time. What does integrity mean? It's something today I strive for. That's all I need and want in my life. That's all I want, is to be a decent human being who can respect myself and can respect you. And integrity, the word means whole. Well, by the time I got to the fifth step and working through these steps, and as I said, this is just, I'm talking about the first go-around and the 1,800,000th go-around of the steps. They are never ending. But again, I've been so fragmented, and I've been out here, and some part, you knew part of me here, and I'm not told this, and I'm into this therapy, or I'm wanting to do this, and reading this book. You know, by this time, I've gotten things a little bit simple, and I'm with one sponsor, and I'm in one program, and I'm in one situation, I'm in one job. Things are beginning. I'm kind of this, not starting this, starting that. I listened, and I just cut the clutter out. But I'm beginning by talking about it to become whole. Okay, but anyway, that's where I begin to be able. How much longer do I have?
All the time in the world.
Well, I'm not doing too bad, am I? What time? I can just talk all day about this. But anyway, all these millions of pieces, I'm beginning to give them to you. When you go in a meeting, I'm giving them to you. I say, you tell me what to do with them, or you take them to a sponsor. Here, you take this. And a sponsor, trust me, a good sponsor will gladly take them. She will gladly help you heal. Because in that process, she will become healed herself. That's that joy. That's the magic. That's power. That's power. But when you and I come together, when two or more are gathered in His name, there is love. And love is indeed the end all. That's what lasts. Every relationship you'll ever have in your whole life, no matter how sweet, no matter how dear, will end. Trust me. They all do. My sister-in-law died on Christmas Eve last year, suddenly, and it broke my heart. And we're facing Christmas without her again, and I talk about it because it's just sitting right with me. It's one of the sweetest relationships I've ever had, when I was drunk and when I was sober. One of the very few that continued on. But she's gone. Her spirit's with me. It's in my heart. Part of who I am today is her, because of her. She's inside of me, and that's the joy. But those relationships end, but there's one that will never, ever end. It can only get better, and that's the God of our understanding. The power, the magic, if you will, and it's given to us through the steps and through the action. But only you can take that action. You're the only ones who can do this. But anyway, this is also in the fifth step where I begin to, as I love the speaker who once said, I stop focusing on the crucifixion and beginning to look at my resurrection. So many of us stay in this program, and you know them, you may be one of them. You're going to sit there with your problems, you're going to sit on them and say, poor me, victim, da 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 da, and that ain't living life. I ain't going to live that way. I'm not going to live the way I live for most of my life. For 34 years of my life, I went to hell. And I'm not going to do that. But anyway, we are talking about that. And some people get impaled on the third step. And it's just that crucifixion. And I love that analogy, crucifixion and resurrection. But anyway, we begin to make choices. And we begin to recognize that we can make choices and that we do have to. And we begin to become more a part of, because we've shared with a sponsor, we get braver, we get bolder. And in the big book, at the end of the step five, which I think is really great, it says that we now begin to have a spiritual experience. We think all along we've been having it, but it says now we have it. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will come strongly, often come strongly. We feel we are now on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Wow. I mean, think about where you just came from and you've gotten to here, and the despair and the behavior. Think about your last drunk, where you were, who you were with. Think about your family, the destruction you wrought. Think about the how many times you've skipped out on creditors, how many cars you've wrecked, how many jail cells you've been in. And after a point, you're here on the broad highway walking with the spirit of the universe. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. It doesn't say know us better, that it knew me better. That ain't the point of this, but that I knew Him better. The real me, the spirit that was all but killed by alcoholism and the separation that that caused, the sickness of the spirit, which is what this whole thing's about. Alcoholism is a soul sickness, and a sickness of the spirit is beginning to be healed. And Carl Jung, he's a psychologist, is really actively a part of this program. He said that in one of his talks about this thing, or one of the letters he wrote, that alcoholism doesn't come from a bottle, but it comes from within people. Alcoholism is really a spiritual thirst for wholeness. There's that integrity. Alcoholism is caused by separation from God, from the whole. If I separate myself from God, which I do each time I pick up a drink, and God has all power, then I'm separating myself from power. When I don't do the steps of the program, when I do as I'm told or make the changes that are necessary in my behavior, then I am separating myself. Nobody else is doing it. I am from the power. I am powerless. My innermost self is the spirit, and the sickness of the spirit is caused by separation from God. I have to flip that switch on back there if I want light in this room. But 6 and 7, when I went on to these steps, you know, the 6th step is simply a readiness step. This is where we get ready. We make the soil ready, ourselves ready for God to remove our defects. I cannot remove my own defects of character. I have not the power, the ability. That's not what it's about. Only He can do this. And He's not going to remove my limitations. He will not do this. This is what makes me human. I am human. I am not limitless. I am not perfect. I am not God. I am human. That's it. And that's not an excuse. It's a wonderful thing to be a human being, because He's given us an awful lot of good things that can happen to us as human beings. But I've got to know this, that I cannot remove my own defects, but I've got to be able to look at what I found in the 4th step. And this is where it gets tough, and this is where most people drop out of meetings and start roaming around and leaving. They don't want to talk about 6th and 7th step, because that's where the real me had to stand up. The real Marcia had to stand up to look at what I had done and who I had become and what kind of person I was. And boy, what a lot had to be changed. But we know that in the 12 and 12 on page 76 in the 7th step, it says the chief activator of my defects has been self-centered fear. Well, you know, this I got to know today. I have got to know this today. I've got to know that at some time in the past, I have made a decision based on self. This self versus God business has got to continually forever be in my mind and in my soul. That I have got to guard against the self that is there and waiting and ready and able to spring back no matter what. The self, the defects will never go away, so they will not magically be removed. But God, with our cooperation, will keep them manageable enough or out of the way of our lives enough so that we can continue to grow. But by step 7 is where the tears came. Oh my goodness, the gratitude and the joy and the recognition that indeed a transformation was taking place in my life. I could actually be so grateful to you people, to the program, to my sponsors, and I was learning to respect you people. If you've got a good sponsor, she's going to keep you busy doing service work, doing things, getting out of yourself, and when somebody asks you to do something and you say you're going to do it, do it. Don't say, yeah, I'll do it. You know why? You do it and you say, yeah, I'll do it, because you're afraid not to say no. But then you don't show up. I don't respect people like that today, because that's the way I was. And that's changed in me. When you ask me to do something, you better know I'm going to do it. And if I can't, you're going to know why. I will never, never stand you up. I will never be late unless it's some terrible thing happened. But you're going to know about it. Because that's where it's stealing people's peace of mind. And that's the worst theft there is on this earth. My daughter's home was burglarized Wednesday, and she's single. She's 26 years old. She lives in a huge house. And we had to go through that hell and the anger that I felt over her being violated like that. And it's happened to me before, and I just hate that. I despise it. But it's just things they took. But more than anything, they took her peace of mind. Because she can't go back to that house for a couple of days because they tore the place up and the windows are broken. And so, but then when she goes back, she's got to not feel safe. Well, think about all the people who worried about you every time that you didn't show up somewhere and you said you were going to be there. They worried. You stole their peace of mind. So keep that in mind forever. That's what stealing, what the real meaning becomes once we look at ourselves. But anyway, by the time we get to step 8, and I've got some time, heck. Shoot, I've still got 15 minutes. In step 8, and at this step I absolutely cherish, and I love it. I love it. I love it in this little book. I can't get enough of it, and I never dreamed. But then this step, I was only confronting myself still. You see, all of us want to run right out and from the very day I came in, I wanted to tell everybody that I'd ever harmed. I'm sorry. They don't get it. They don't care. They really don't want to hear that. They're sick of it. They want to see something different. But they couldn't even see me being sober. I had to do some things in between. But the eighth step is a perfect place. It's, all these steps are inventory steps, but the eighth step in the 12 and 12, and go read it, you're going to be amazed, because it defines what harm's done means. We're still, I was only looking out, looking at myself. I had just done the seventh step prayer. Now these prayers that you pray, and they're in the books, there are answers to them. Here's what's wonderful, if you'll pick up this book and take action, do what it says right after that prayer. You just had a prayer answer and a miracle has happened. Let's use that word miracle instead of magic. Because the seventh step prayer says, my Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. It has it in there, good and bad, all of me. I'm acknowledging, see, by now that there is good in me. Wow, what a difference, what a change. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you, my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. It doesn't say my usefulness to me, 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 me. It says my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And amen means amen. End. Well, the answer to that, it goes on in the book to say, in the big book, now we need more action without which faith. We find that faith without works is dead. We need more action. That's the next sentence after that seventh step prayer. So don't get up every day and pray that prayer and then just go on about it. It says action. Well, the next thing that we do, in the big book it says we, at the moment we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Well, we've accepted responsibility for our own life and we've had to stop blaming other people for our problems. And now we're going to have to look at our own actions really hard and our personality, which is reflected in my behavior. My personality, the 12 and 12 actually says, my personality has actually harmed other people. Wow. And I know it can harm a lot of people today because I got a mouth on me. But the answer to the seventh step prayer is 8 and 9. As I go out from here to do your bidding, then 8 and 9. Well, we've taken a look at 8. Okay, I'm preparing to make these amends. And the amend steps will be the most incredible adventure of your life. That's why the promises are written directly after. That is indeed where miracles, if you've begun to experience miracles, they do, you feel them and you know them. You know. There's a difference between believing and knowing. And that happens with these. But in the 8 steps, in the 12 and 12, it says, since defective relations with other human beings have nearly been always been the immediate cause of our woes, including our alcoholism, no field of investigation could yield more satisfying and valuable rewards than this one. We can go far beyond those things that were superficially wrong with us. See, in the fourth step, we really looked at the general things that first time around. But we got to go far beyond that to see those flaws which were basic, flaws which sometimes were responsible for the whole pattern of our lives. If you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what you're getting. It is a law of the universe. So all of you who are miserable, stuck, whatever you're feeling today, this weekend is an 11th step attempt to improve your conscious contact with the God of your understanding and the deepening of His knowledge of His will for you and giving you power to carry it out. But it's when you go home tomorrow and back out into that world, did you get anything? Did you listen? Have you made a commitment to do something? But in the 8th step, we remember that what we found in step 4, the instincts on rampage are the cause of our disease. That is alcoholism. Your instincts, God-given, on rampage, that's alcoholism. And now we remember that harm is the result of instincts in collision. The 8th step, we're beginning to move toward other people and recognize that our instincts on rampage have been in collision with people. Everybody we run into, they've got instincts too. We're all human beings. We've all got the God-given instinct. It's just head on. One alcoholic with another one, oh boy, look out. So rampage, oh my God. But even with just a normal person, we've hurt people. And that harm is that which causes physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual damage to people. That's what I was talking about, stealing. If you think, I sold cars, I don't do that anymore. I sold money, I don't do that anymore. Spiritual harm is stealing somebody's peace of mind. So that's why investigating these steps and reading them and studying them is important. But step 9, And remember, the amends steps, I had to do for my sake. I'm doing them for me. And that'll relieve you too. When you get afraid to go out to somebody and you're all your pride and your ego and, oh God, I gotta face them and tell them I stole all that money or I did all that stuff. Don't go ever go tell a woman you took her husband though or slept with her husband. Don't do that. Don't do it. It's just not right. Please. But all the other things, and work with a sponsor on this, but they'll help you. But amend steps, I had to know when I knew they were being done for my sake, I had to clean myself up, clean my vessel out so that God could save me through His healing, through His grace. Then I was willing to do it. But I had to understand, as I said before, the resentments, the anger, the retaliation, all these things had rotted my soul and fastened my troubles to me. And I love that expression because more problems resulted from the resentments. And that didn't even have anything to do with the original problem. And it's just that snowballing effect. So I had to do this. But step nine was simply for me, and it is to this day, to simply do the next right thing, period. Just do what's right. That's all. Just do what's right. I got to find out whether I think it's right or not. That's what a sponsor's for, and that's what the books are for. They tell me what's right. Because I'm an alcoholic. My first thought ain't going to necessarily be what's right. But if God is love, and forgiveness is a key to love, then I've got to experience forgiveness. And I've got to give forgiveness. I've got to. And we've already started talking about it. We were forgiven in the fifth step when that woman sits across the table from me and accepts me and says, it's okay, I love you anyway. And we're beginning to know God loves us too. Then we're going to have to do this and we're going to have to extend it to other people and ask their forgiveness. But we have no control over whether they give it to us or not. That's not our problem. That's between them and God. But we've got to make that offer. As long as we stay stuck as long as you want to again, hold on to your resentments, but tell me how your life turns out, how you feel on a daily basis. Here's where I learned that I can no longer talk my way out of what I acted my way into, that I've got to act my way out. Got different now. I can talk my way out of anything before I thought. But now I've got to act different. I've got to behave different. 10, 11, and 12, for me, are growth steps. They call them maintenance steps. For me, it's a continuous situation. My behavior now has changed, so because of what I've been told to do, I'm doing what I don't want to do and not what I want to. I'm doing what a sponsor says do and not what I choose to do. I'm actually listening to somebody else. If she said, stand over here, I stood over there. She says, go here. I don't say where, why, how. I go, and I got good results. That's the measure of good sponsorship. Today, that's all. Nobody's trying on a power ego trip. I've been accused of having so much power over people who I sponsor. I have no power over anybody. You ain't going to do nothing you don't want to do, and I can't make you, and I don't want to make you. Because my sponsor don't. Everything she ever has told me, she's ended it up with the same sentence. Now, go home, get by yourself and God, and decide what you're going to do, because you're going to do what you want to do anyway. Put it right back on your shoulder. But anyway, by doing these things, these steps, and by the 10th step, I am stark raving sober. I have not had a drink in a long time. And as the book says, and I like exactly what it says because it's in the 10th step, it's called the acid test. Where is it? I think the 10th step is the finest set of directions for living your life on a daily basis of anything I've ever seen. The 10th step can be worked from the minute you come into this program, but keep in mind its true effectiveness, for me, doesn't really kick in until I've worked the others, because the 10th step is an actual, for me, is a daily working of steps 1 through 9. So I gotta really, but it's good to keep the trouble level down. Don't add to the 8 steps sober. That, cause you ain't got an excuse anymore. You can't say I was drunk. You know y'all know the mating call for southern women? Oh y'all, I am so drunk. Don't you love that? I think that is so cool. But anyway, I had to throw that in there. It just came to mind. But the steps have required self-examination of my self-will, and had to be two ingredients in working these steps for me, to look at my self-will and what's God's will. So that's the study of this program and understanding what does my life look like under my will? What's my life going to look like under God's care? I got to know that every step that I work. And the 10th step just keeps me out of trouble. My mouth, my thoughts. When I'd have a thought, and you do something, that sting would come on and that evil thought, and I'd act right on it. Lash out at you, rip into you, do something destructive. Because it's all I can see, it's all I can focus on. By now you have shown me choices, that I do have choices. My spiritual toolkit now is so overflowing with opportunities and ways to resolve a problem without killing somebody or myself or ending up in jail. Used to be my only tool in my toolkit was a hammer. And every problem I had looked like a nail. So I would beat it to death. Well, I don't have to do that. I don't have to do that anymore. But I've got to know. And on a daily basis, the 10th step, here's what it says in the 10th step. The acid test, it says, these are the words, and I'm quoting these books because they are wonderful. Please, if you haven't opened them, read them. Try it. You're going to be amazed. Then comes the acid test. Can we stay sober, keep an emotional balance, and live to good purpose under all conditions? That's what it says. Can I do that? Well, through the first 9 steps, we've been given an outline for living. The first 9 steps, that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. 10, 11, and 12 enable us, and we should be working 10, 11, and 12 along with every step that we work. But the 10th step enables us to keep in balance, keep perspective, those emotions that come up, not to act on them directly. Have a choice. Put a thought between the action and the thought. That's sober living. That's magic. That's power. That is power. We have begun to have power to act in a way that we can produce a cause or an effect that is good, that is healthy. That's what's power. And it's not destructive to me or to you or to the God that has brought us all here together. My ego is kept intact through these steps. And the definition of ego, if you always hear about your pride and your ego, you don't know what it means, and I believe in dictionaries. I look up every word that comes along, even if it's one I think I know, because anything I think I know, that's a red light right there. And that's a good sign. If you're new in the program or if you're struggling, every time you say, well, I know, stop. No, you don't. No, you don't. Maybe you don't. But ego is the part of my mind or myself which it's really me, but it's a part of my mind which focuses on the needs of my body and my personality. And it therefore splits me away from my spirituality. When anger seems justified, I can be certain that peace of mind is not my goal. See, we've quit lying to ourselves by now. Self-deceit got me in this program, and it can take my butt right back out of here if I start that little cycle one more time. If I've got justified anger, I got to know I cannot, love and fear cannot coexist. It's impossible. God is love and fear is the devil or whatever you want to call it. No, you cannot be afraid and feel all of God's love at one time. I got to know that. And if I'm angry and it's justified, then at least be honest, and I have to be honest with myself, then peace ain't what I want. I want war. And say it. Be honest enough to say, nope, I don't want to feel good today. Nope, I do want to call this resentment. Yep, I'm going to fight on this one. At least be honest enough for yourself. Don't say, well, it hurts and I've got a right to feel this way because... That's just for me, because I know where I can get. I can get myself in big time trouble. But anyway, I finally have become a part of God's will, a part of what He intended for my life. And I'm not on the sidelines anymore, and I'm not a victim anymore. I'm a part of... The book actually tells me that I'm actually meant... I have a purpose and a place in His scheme of things. What a joyous experience to know that I've got purpose and meaning in life, and that there's actually something that He wants me to do, that He wants everybody in this room who's got any willingness at all to listen and to sit up and take notice, to have a transformation happen in your life. He's got something for, He wants everybody in this room to do today and for the rest of your life. What a joy. And the 11th step is simply the vital step that I'm on to this moment and then right now to be able to still keep perspective and to keep growing and to keep asking Him on a daily basis just to keep me in a day. I get so far out of bounds. I get so far out of there. But self-examination, prayer, and meditation, as the books tell us, when they're all taken together, they form a foundation that is unshakable and a foundation for life. But what I want to close with, because I'm not going to talk anymore, there's too many things to say, but there's a couple of things in another meditation book that I read, and it's talking about, it's called The Kindling of God. And I like what it says because it reminds me of Alcoholics Anonymous. It reminds me of, it gives me a way to look at God and me in this big picture. And I'm able to see God through you. That's my way. See, it's not that way for everybody. Some people can go directly there, but you are so vital. You are my links. I experience God in this room, and when we say the Lord's Prayer, he's in here with me. He was in the car with Kim and me this morning. But you're my links to him. But I like this. If you start to think about man as a spark from a great fire, which is God, the spark is not the whole of the fire, but it's part of it, and therefore of the same nature and possesses potentially all the characteristics of the parent fire. Think about that. We've all got God. He's sitting right here inside of us. All we need to do in this program, it's so simple, and it really is. We clear up, we clean up, and we grow up through the steps of this program. We're given a foundation with the first three steps. We're given directions in the next few steps, and then the rest of the steps are just keeping it going. But we've actually, that God would clear in the clutter, get the garbage out, get past all that stuff, so he can rise up. The God of your understanding will be so clear to you, and your purpose will be, and life will indeed take on a new meaning unlike any you've ever known. But it possesses potentially all the characteristics of the parent fire. It can ignite many things upon which it falls, thus producing another fire, essentially of the same nature as the original fire. Every time one alcoholic shares with another alcoholic, there's the magic, there's the spark that sets another fire, that sets another, and they're all from an original big fire, which is God. There's what it is, identification with each other, that we do know how each other feels, and we know those feelings can be changed. Our thinking can actually be changed. But once we have accepted that God has all power, that it's from him that life flows, and once we've worked and continue to work in earnest to sweep away the barriers that we've built, we literally stand in the presence of infinite love and infinite power. We step from the bridge to the shore. I love that thought. From that hell, the despair, the utter hopelessness that all of us have felt at one time or another, and that our families, the destruction, we step from the bridge to the shore. We live in conscious companionship with our Creator. God has literally restored our sanity. That's a miracle. Magic, if you will. Transformation, if you will. That's power. What is this but a miracle of healing? And this comes from the big book. Yet its elements are simple. Circumstances made us willing to believe. When we humbly offered ourselves to our Maker, then we knew. Remember what I said about believing and knowing. Believing in God is not enough for us. We must know. And if we do these steps, a living God materializes before our very eyes. Talk about magic. Wow. I see God in every one of you today. God will restore us to our right mind, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but he has come to all who has honestly sought him, and to seek means act, take actions. When we drew near to him, again, I got to take action to draw near to him, he discloses himself to us. And what does a life look like that's been placed in the care of, in God's care? That's what you got to look around and what you got to think about. I want to close with one thing that I read on a card in a card shop not too long ago, and I thought it was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever read because it explains exactly what happened. And nobody can know. Each of you will take your own journey. And at 16 years sober, as I said, I feel like, and I want to always feel this way, like I am brand new, and I have every day to be brand new and to learn something, to learn something. You know what real spirituality is? It's putting into practice what you already have. If you keep saying, I need more faith, as Maggie would say, why don't you use what faith you've got? Why don't you just do that? Bloom where you're planted. and then we're open. But use what I've got. So I've got to do that. And I don't. I don't use my fullest potential every day. I let the world come in on me. But today I've got a world. I've got responsibilities. I have people in my life. I have people depending on me and loving me. I have a wonderful job. I have a wonderful family. And 16 years ago, I had nothing. I had absolutely nothing. My soul was gone. Everything, physical, emotional, spiritual, everything that ever meant anything to me was gone. And now my life is so full. I could not be anything more than just joyous, happy, and free today, regardless of the problems. And every day brings new problems. I have suffered, endured people's deaths in my family in the last few years, and it just keep happening. And every day there's something. There's something. A life something that's so hard for all of us. But I don't have to not just drink over it. But I can actually deal with it. I got choices. And I can go to bed at night. And I don't have to hurt anybody else in the decision that I make to handle it. But anyway, at some point during my journey, this happened to me. And I want you to listen to this because it's going to happen or it's happened to all of you. But don't forget it. I don't want to ever forget where I came from. And this is why I continue to do this. And God has given me the ability. Through this program, I've been able to speak all over this country to groups of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I say that with all humility because I have gone places I never dreamed I would go. Next year, I'm going to Palm Springs. Isn't that exciting and romantic? I've thought about getting everything lifted for the, you know. Real important. I told all of my sponsorees for Christmas, don't give me another book or a plaque. Put money in here for this job. But just give money. But the joy and the absolute humility that I feel because of the friends that I make. And you know what's so great about that? I can go to these places and I come away with phone numbers. I come away with their love. And I come away with their caring. And if I ever need help, oh, I've got help everywhere I go with each of you, everywhere, all over this country, all over this world. It's God's world. He's given me all the answers. He's given it to all of you. All I got to do is reach out and take it. But something that happened to me, and this is what I want to close with, suddenly, quietly, you realize that from this moment forth, and I don't know when it'll be for you, but it'll happen, you will no longer pass through this world alone. Like a new sun, this awareness rises within you, freeing you from fear, opening your life. This is the beginning of love and the end of all that came before. And I love you, and I thank you for having me here, and y'all have a great weekend.